And with us on the phone is Scott calling from Clifton. Hello, Scott.
Hey, fellas, what's up?
What's up with you tonight, Scott?
Well, before I get started on my conspiracy theory, I got a theory for you.
Okay. Go for it.
I'd just like to let you know that my orbs are always pulsating at a very high rate.
Are they always round?
And they have been spotted over Nevada, if you know what I'm saying.
You got them on video?
I think so. Someone else has them, but I don't have the copy.
They were pulsating at the Mustang Ranch.
Are they day-glow?
What?
Never mind.
They get sort of a greenish color going when you really get them worked up.
That's kind of scary.
But anyway.
That's supernatural.
This isn't about UFOs. I don't mean to deviate from the topic.
That's okay.
I wanted to talk about the real conspiracy going on. I think you guys know what I'm talking about.
And what's that?
That would be the international conglomerate of high-class, low-profile gangsters and muscle men working for the bankers, the Wall Street boys, and, of course, the big boss, supranationalistic capitalism.
Okay.
That's right. I'm talking about black helicopters. I'm talking about real conspiracy. I'm talking about the New World Order.
Down to earth a little bit. A lot of people say they see these black helicopters, but you know what? They're usually just the DEA looking for fields of pot, or they're flying over some city with some kind of these are really police helicopters, and they got infrared detectors in them, so if you're growing weed in your basement, they're going to come down, they're going to bust your ass.
Well, hey, I was a non-believer too, okay? And then I read the book. Have you read the book?
Which book would that be?
That would be Black Helicopters Over America, Strike Force for the New World Order by Mr. Jim Keith.
That was written about, actually on Dateline or something.
Yeah, well, Mr. Keith has it going on, all right? You know what I'm saying? And I just wanted to read you a couple clips from here, okay?
Please do.
There's a section on cow mutilations,
mm-hmm.
Okay? A lot of mysterious cow mutilations.
Cow mutilations are usually associated with extraterrestrial visitation.
Oh, no, my friend. That's a common misconception. But I'll give that one to you. It's the helicopters, buddy. Okay, you can forget about the little spacemen. We got real people in real machinery coming down here to take our freedom, my friend. Now, I'm going to read here, okay? One second. All right, in February 1976 in Wood County, Texas, Mrs. A.D. Cruz heard a loud helicopter circling her house. A mutilated cow was found on the property the following morning. Pretty mysterious. Now let's move on. Okay. On the 3rd of October, 1984, in Weston County, Wyoming, Raymond Spud Jones and some of his neighbors woke up hearing a, quote, high-pitched whine like a jet turbine starting. On October 6th, Jones found the mutilated carcass of one of his cows in a nearby pasture. Starting to freak out, is it? Huh? Well, I'm going to move on. You just wait for this one. This is the kicker right here, baby. One second here, let me get to the page.
All right. Read us the letter from the Air Force guy as he retired that's in the beginning of the book.
Oh, you don't want to hear that, Matt. Just listen up.
That'll keep you up at night. Okay, go for it.
All right. In early autumn of 1989, relatively recently, mm-hmm. a hunter in the Red Mountain area near Norris, Montana, saw a black helicopter without identifying markings fly overhead and then swoop below a low hill. Blah, 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 the hunter climbs up, he sees seven men who apparently came from the chopper and were wearing civilian clothes climbing the hill in the direction of him. The hunter waves at the group and shouted greetings. Now here's where it really kicks in and it gets creepy, right? Then, as he saw the group more clearly, he was surprised to realize that the men were all Orientals. All right?
No.
You getting this? And speaking in a language he couldn't understand. You know what that means? It means it wasn't English, all right?
Does that mean that the international armies are coming to invade America?
It's and the U.S., bring the, baby.
Dressed
it's
as
the
businessmen?
UN? Now, wait. You're cutting me off here.
Okay.
The Oriental men turned and headed back to the chopper, and when the hunter attempted to follow, they started to run. They reached the helicopter and took off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then, as the hunter was walking back to his house, what did he find?
What?
What did he find?
Mutilated cow.
He found a mutilated cow, my friend.
Did I win something?
What?
I guessed. I got it right.
Hey, well, cut to the Queen City, Clifton, USA, right? 1997, right?
Okay.
Me, little Scotty B, I'm kicking it in my crib, right?
Right.
I'm chilling like a mega villain. I got Third Rock from the Sun on the box, right? I cracked open an ice-cold Zima. Now, you know, I love Third Rock because John Lithgow's like this alien guy. He's like a fish out of water, right? He doesn't know how to work like regular kitchen stuff. And it's zany stuff. It's crazy. But anyway, I see my kitty cat scratching at the door, right? It wants out. We live across the street from a park, a nice little park where kids play. So I let the kitty out to go romp in the street. I sit down just in time to catch, you know, one last zany, kooky thing from John Lithgow. And then as my laughter subsides, I hear some strange noises in the park.
Right? Uh-huh.
I look out the window, and what do I see?
A mutilated cat.
No, no.
A fortune cookie.
You know what I saw?
An Asian guy flying a chopper.
I saw two AH-64 Apaches and four Black Cobra gunships. And you know what else?
What?
A cargo and troop transport Super Stallion, which is the free world's largest helicopter, my friend. And next to that, a mutilated cow.
All right? In Clifton?
What?
In Clifton, there was a mutilated cow.
Yeah, I'm telling you, this is no joke.
Well,
right?
Your kitty's all right, isn't he?
Well, then, well then, we're going to get to that. All right, now there's a bunch of guys standing around. They got machine guns and stuff. They're sort of milling around, right? Yeah. Observer by nature, I don't usually get into this stuff.
Might as well say.
My cat, Little Muffin.
You like
mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please, won't you be my neighbor? Hello, neighbor.
And let's lie down on the stomach in preparation for backbending exercises. The head to the side, the hands to the side. The backbending postures stretch out the whole spine. And since we're on the abdomen, we're massaging all the internal organs. In preparation for cobra, let's bring the forehead on the floor, the fingertips under the shoulders, the palms flat down, and the heels together. And inhaling, let's slowly scrape the nose and chin along the floor, picking up the head, the throat, and the chest, leaving the navel on the floor. With each inhalation, let's try to stretch a little bit more. With each exhalation, let's hold. Again, if we feel a strain, slowly come down. And if we're straining, we're not doing yoga. And straightening the elbows just a little, let's come up even higher. The elbows bend and into the sides. The top of the head back, stretching the thyroid. Stretching with the inhalation, holding with the exhalation. And on the next exhalation, but slowly come down. Top of the head, the last to come down. Very graceful, like a cobra. Resting the head to the side, the hands to the sides. Let's just feel the effects. Mentally massaging the base of the spine.
I mean, we're all animals, and but
had Neanderthal ascended to that higher level of consciousness that makes one human?
I would say not. Now, there are other of my colleagues that would say that Neanderthals were just a strange version of us, but I really don't think that's the case. I do think that there are significant cognitive differences between us and the Neanderthals.
What physical evidence are you basing that on? It's cranium size or evidence found at, you know, the site that you dig up the bones where they probably lived?
Exactly, from the material evidence that they left behind them. As I was saying before, in the case of Neanderthals, you don't find cave art. You don't find engravings on pebbles. You don't find evidence of music or notation.
Did they have religion, and did they bury their dead?
Yes, they did. That's one thing that they certainly did do. How regularly they did it is questionable, and how elaborate burials were.
Well, what other animals besides human beings bury their dead?
I'm not aware of any other animals besides humans and modern humans and Neanderthals.
Well, that might be one of the things that might set Neanderthals above the rest of the animal kingdom.
This is true.
Like I'm saying, the spark of humanity.
Exactly. We have a number of indications of that kind. We also have the fact that at least in one very famous case, we've got evidence that a Neanderthal who was severely handicapped, maybe from very early in life, survived to what was for a Neanderthal an advanced age of about 40 years old, and must have had the support of his group to do that.
So you think maybe there was like a Neanderthal version of Jerry Lewis and Neanderthal Jerry's kids?
You know, I think Neanderthal Jerry Lewis is kind of redundant. That's just for me. We're speaking to Ian Tattersall of the American Museum of Natural History and author of The Last Neanderthal. So were the Neanderthals, did they hang out in clans or tribes, or were they singular type creatures?
No, they were social creatures. They lived in groups whose size we're not absolutely sure of, but a guess would be maybe 10 adults and kids of various ages. Not very large size groups.
Now, you know, if you want to see some Neanderthals up close and in action, a good place to see Neanderthals on display is at the Shoemaker Center here in Cincinnati, Ohio, when the UC Bearcats take the court.
Right on. Are you a big basketball fan, Dr. Tattersall?
Not a great fan, but I follow it.
You know, I didn't get the final results tonight, but Kentucky was in overtime, up by 2 points or down by 2 points.
A colleague of mine came running into my office and told me to come out and take a look at something and asked me where the binoculars were. And it was about that time we heard a military helicopter go flying over the house. It was unmarked and it was black. And so I ran out into the back of the compound there, and there it was, doing a skating maneuver back and forth and hovering.
A what maneuver?
It was skating, like gliding left, right, forward, center. It would hover and then it would zigzag. It was making a variety of maneuvers.
And this was a big giant silver triangle?
Yep. I can't tell you what color it was. To the best of my knowledge, it was 3 points of light.
What happened to the helicopter?
It just disappeared off into the distance.
We were talking a little earlier in tonight's program about a common thread with a lot of UFO reports and sightings is that these
common
objects
thread
in the sky will move unlike conventional airplanes or, you know, birds or animals or anything. These things can move on a dime, they can twist and turn and make 90-degree turns like nothing, where a conventional aircraft would have to arc around.
That is correct. There isn't any aircraft that I know of that can make these types of turns.
So this thing you were looking at, it appeared to make intelligent decisions about where it was going?
Yes, not only did it appear to be making intelligent decisions, but by the results of its activity, I would have to assume that it was making a statement.
Could you repeat that?
From the results of the encounter, I would have to say that it was making a statement.
A statement? Is there any statement in particular you think it was making? Or was it just demonstrating its intelligence control?
Cyclones are descending and descending with gas. Prominence is slowly rocketing towards the heavens. Slowly? They must be rising at a million miles an hour for their movement to be visible to his eyes. He didn't even attempt to grasp the scale of the inferno towards which it was almost impossible to estimate the immensity of happening in their interstate. They were certainly enormous, in that solid miles of unknown mega miles away.
They were of many different designs.
Everything you saw here was 100 times larger still. Slim pencils could do nothing but accept the images that were flooding into his mind.
This is one of the meeting places
that
is coming from
the stars. As like pagan fire expanded years ago, Romans should have nowhere to go and see any sign of activity now. He knows only a mile out of the dead as a moon. He knew not only by the absence of all movement, but by such unmistakable signs as great trolling, torn in the normal combination of a lost blunder, the red thumb,
aeons ago,
he would have been burned up in a moment.
This is no longer a high
radiation and not being held a copy by some invisible screen.
plans for our return to Earth. And as we blast off into the stillness of the spatial seas, we try to understand something of what we have seen.
Look up, look up, look up, beyond the flaming sun. There's light enough that's bright enough to kindle faith in everyone. Look up, look up, look up, and find the falling star, the hand divine that made it shine, reminds us just how small we are. Orderly they turn in space.
Tribulation is underway, will be a global earthquake. And I'm speaking of an earthquake that blows off the Richter scale that until 1994, scientists said was impossible. The world has never known of a global earthquake.
Now, is this anything to do with that whole continental shift theory in which all the continents and everything, the upper crust of the Earth, is like the skin of an orange and can shift around at any time?
Well, that's what we now know. In 1994, there was an earthquake in South America, in Colombia, South America, that shook the entire Western Hemisphere. It reached all the way to Canada. The epicenter of the earthquake was more than 400 miles deep. Scientists have never known an earthquake that could exist at such a level, such a depth. This has given way now to a whole new understanding. And in fact, just about 3 weeks ago, the U.S. Geological Survey published a statement indicating that on the northwestern corner of the United States, they are now anticipating an earthquake of a magnitude of 9 in the imminent future because of the Pacific plate is subducting or going under the North American plate, and it's moving at a much more rapid pace than what was thought possible. New instruments have allowed this measurement from satellites, 200,000 miles out in space, or 22,000 miles in space. What I'm saying is that the Bible predicts a series of global events, which science is just now coming to grasp. 10 years ago, when I was explaining from Revelation 8 that the Bible predicts meteor and asteroid impacts, people said I was crazy. It was nuts. Well, that may be true, but that doesn't change what the Bible has to say. When we saw the impact into Jupiter in 1994, the Shoemaker-Levy 9 series of the string of comets.
That's right. There's good photographs of those things crashing into the Jovian atmosphere.
That's correct. And imploding into Jupiter, one of the pieces created a hole large enough to put three of planet Earth. Now, that's a big hole. Now, the scientists and the geoscientists and NASA and a host of people are very concerned about asteroid impacts and asteroid threats, civilization threatening destruction. Well, the Bible predicts there's going to be some of that.
Before we get much further, let's open up a phone line to the listening public. If anyone would like to call in and talk to us, the phone number here is 961-8900. We're talking to Wake Up America and Larry Wilson. You're not far from Dayton, Ohio, are you?
No, in Bellbrook.
Bellbrook, Ohio.
Yes.
Coming to us live from Bellbrook, Larry Wilson, and we're talking about Y2K, the new millennium, and the judgment of the Lord, which is appearing, according to Larry Wilson, to be a little sooner than most of us.
In my understanding, and I confess, I'm only a student of God's Word. I don't claim to be an authority. But I believe that we are in the window of time between 1998 the year
It's a place where you're healthy every day, you're not sick, you're well rested, and you have plenty of crafts and activities to keep you busy.
What, like macrame rabbits and stuff? If they're making macrame rabbits all day?
Well, it's kind of like summer camp, but you can sleep because you're not scared of the guy in the bed next to you.
Oh, I remember that guy. So hell is, you're stuck in the cabin with that guy next to you, just pummeling you all night long.
Or you got the guy above you who's got the leaky bladder.
Oh, boy. The Chris and Rob Show, WAIF. There's no such thing as hell, says our next guest, Dr.
What?
Mark Pitstick. Hello, Dr. Pitstick.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Excellent.
Now we're down here in the Southern Ohio Bible Belt, down here in Hamilton County, Cincinnati, Ohio.
Right.
A lot of people are going to say, what do you mean there's no such thing as hell? You're taking away our means of making a living here at our church, because without hell, we don't have nothing to threaten our congregation with.
Yeah, actually, my full statement would be there's no such thing as a fiery, eternal hell. Certainly, there are self-induced temporary hells. People here and in other dimensions are in temporary hells, but no such thing as a fiery, eternal hell.
So, when you die and you're a bad person, you don't go to a fiery, eternal hell?
For a while, perhaps, especially if that's what a person feels like they deserve, and if that's what they believe in. I use a lot of the scientific evidence that is out there now as a result of near-death experiences, past life regressions, after-death contacts, studied by many different scientists, psychiatrists, and psychologists. So we have a lot of insights now about what hell is really about. And certainly there are people in the literature who have experienced hellish existences. For example, people who have near-death experiences as a result of committing suicide or trying to commit suicide. Instead of seeing the white light and beautiful green grass and meeting Jesus and so on, they had horrible, horrific, nightmarish, fiery experiences. But what they were taught by the beings of light was, that's not forever.
Hold on a minute. Who are the beings of light? You just threw that one at us.
Okay, these would be religious personages, depending on the person's religion. If there's a very Christian person, they would see Jesus. Some people see angels. Hindus would see Krishna and so on. So these are termed collectively as beings of light.
The being of light.
And they'll tell you, they'll take you on your spiritual journey into the afterlife.
Right, these are the religious personages that people who almost die meet. And again, also in the past life regression, popularized by Dr. Brian Weiss. In both cases, people who had these experiences were taught that hell is a temporary place where we put ourselves, and it's self-induced. We choose there. It's a separation from God. So this is one of my proofs that there is no such thing as a fiery eternal hell. Some of the scientific evidence that we now have.
Was there a beatific heaven?
You know what? What did you just say? I say
beatific.
I butcher words all the time. I don't know what.
I got a fever. I'm like, I got 101 degree fever. I'm allowed to butcher words. Is there like a really nice heaven where you float around on clouds, and, or maybe not float around on clouds?
Everybody's got little wings on their back.
But you know what I mean. Is there a physical place that's a heaven where everybody's good to each other and we have enough love and enough kindness?
There's certainly realms like that, but primarily heaven and hell are states of mind, states of consciousness, levels of being. In other words, a person who is really ungodly and not spiritual at all and living a horrible life could be put right in the midst of heaven, and that would seem like hell to them.
If you come and tell me your problems about Christmas or something, they always try to help you. Especially Mr. Olson. He's so nice, you know. And then he says if you're fine, you know, with your friends, you know, but you can't hear them. We're always around each other. You know, it's the, wherever we go, we go with each other because we're all real good friends. So we help each other with homework. She doesn't know how to read good. So we need to have a teacher that will read to us, you know, and then her and me work with his Spanish homework. And he's real good about it, you know, because he understands kids more than anybody I know. I pay $1,000 here if I have a rent. Are your kids all in here because of that sort of thing?
I like it whenever someone does a cover tune of a VU song. Lou will always say, man, that's the best person ever.
He had a down period after the Velvet Underground before his solo things came up. He had a breakdown.
I didn't know he got that desperate.
Yeah, you know Lester Bang, rock critic?
Right, yeah, Lester
Bang. Okay. The beings are mine.
Something about the Clash. Well, Joe Strummer's not a true punk. He's from the middle class background and all this. Like,
ending the war in Vietnam and everything.
I didn't beat them when I get older.
It's awfully red down here, sir. Is Mars completely a desert in this sector?
No. You'll see the first signs of vegetation in a few moments. We're heading toward the equator, so there, to the west. See those patches of green? Yeah, I'm curious to know, Commander Clifford, is any of that stuff edible?
No, Colonel, at least not in its raw state. With the arrival of the equipment you brought, we'll begin testing various preparations of plant life. I do hope we succeed in making it edible, and soon the rations up here are getting pretty monotonous.
What about animal life, sir? I mean, is there really such a thing as a Martian?
Yeah, we don't actually know, Lieutenant. The base has been operative for only a short time, and to date, no animal form has been observed. Once the installation work is finished and the men can return to being scientists instead of plumbers and carpenters, we'll attack the problem with some systematic exploration.
How great do you think are the chances of discovering intelligence?
Are you guys concerned at all about any kind of bandwagon effect that this might create? I mean, granted, you may have some really interesting sightings there, but are you guys being real careful about the information you're taking in beyond that, because I'm sure there are a lot of people that are going to see airplanes in the sky, and simply because of all these other sightings, you're going to make...
Well, we had that missile takeoff last night from Southern California, which caused a bit of a stir, but the communications actually in Phoenix is pretty good. You can turn on to an AM station in Phoenix, and we had an answer in 10 minutes. It's just like they had a weather balloon about 6-8 weeks ago, and it was like at 70,000 feet and 400 feet in diameter. NASA. Mm-hmm. And it created quite a stir, too, but the answer was solved real quick. And
right.
if you look through binoculars, I mean, it did not cause hysteria like a lot of the debunkers are doing. You know, they're saying thousands of people called in, and it's just hysteria, and that's just not true.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we had a similar situation up here last summer in Middletown, Ohio, roughly centrally located in Ohio. There were a series of sightings around July.
But we debunked
July.
That we, right here on the program.
We talked about that. I'm getting to that.
Okay.
You know,
he's
talking about the debunkers and the kind of yapping they do. In the middle of this, even though we...
Hepatitis is hip
hoax,
again?
And there were debunkers that were saying this was like mass hysteria, and it was nothing of the sort. These people were...
No, I haven't noticed that, Fred. I haven't been checking arms and ankles enough lately, I guess.
No, I mean, you really don't have... I saw a fringe on the fourth suddenly.
I
think the coolest thing you can have now is like a really good friend who dies of heroin overdose.
I don't know.
Guys like Chris and Terry, who get picked on almost daily in their everyday life, they get bullied when they go to the grocery store. They get people
yeah,
cut
I love those good old days when you could just get really whacked on some animal tranquilizer.
Yeah. I don't really think, maybe I'm getting old, but I don't think that's totally it. It's like this is the first time in my life I felt like I really don't have any kind of pulse on what's happening. But I'm talking to some kids that are saying the same thing, that there really isn't anything going on.
It's all so fragmented nowadays.
Well, it's real.
You're seeing the movies
I don't know
where
you know
an evil government or even an evil mad scientist will create an army of... say Sylvester Stallone's or Kurt Russell's, and you'll have an army of these super duper tough guys who've been trained to do the bidding of evil.
Well, I think that's a possibility.
That's what that new Star Wars movie is supposed to be about.
I think that's a possibility. Of course, you know, right now it's easier and cheaper just to take a bunch of teenage recruits and put them through boot camp for a few weeks.
Okay, hold on now. You're starting to run down the country that we all love.
And they come out pretty hot to shoot machine guns and kill people and so forth. So I don't think you need to go through the whole process of cloning them and then raising them and so on to do that. You pretty much socialize them to do that right off the bat.
You need to think big.
Yeah, isn't the idea behind this evil scenario where you would start cloning only the super strong and you'd clone some kind of a master race and you'd actually do some breeding like you do with champion horses and breed the toughest soldier that you can?
That's perfectly capable. Yeah, we could do that. We could take, we could improve the human specimen and we could dumb them down as well so that they would be much, much more efficient soldiers.
Well, you don't want to talk about ethics, but that's got to sound wrong, do you?
It sounds different.
Come on, Doc, say it's wrong.
Once, when I was 6 years old, I saw a magnificent picture in a book called True Stories from Nature about the primeval forest. It was a picture of a boa constrictor in the act of swallowing an animal. In the book it said, boa constrictors swallow their prey whole without chewing it. After that, they are not able to move and they sleep through the 6 months that they need for digestion. I pondered deeply then over the adventures of the jungle. And after some work with a colored pencil, I succeeded in making my first drawing. My drawing number one. I showed my masterpiece to the grown-ups and asked them whether the drawing frightened them. But they answered, frightened? Why should anyone be frightened by a hat? My drawing was not the picture of a hat. It was a picture of a boa constrictor digesting an elephant. But since the grown-ups were not able to understand it, I made another drawing. I drew the inside of the boa constrictor so that the grown-ups could see it clearly. They always need to have things explained. My drawing number two. The grown-ups' response this time was to advise me to lay aside my drawings of boa constrictors whether from the inside or the outside, and devote myself instead to geography, history, arithmetic, and grammar. And that is why, at the age of 6, I gave up what might have been a magnificent career as a painter. I had been disheartened by the failure of my drawing number 1 and my drawing number 2. Grown-ups never understand anything by themselves, and it is tiresome for children to be always and forever explaining things to them. So then I chose another profession and learned to pilot aeroplanes. I've flown a little over all parts of the world, and it is true that geography has been very useful to me. At a glance, I can distinguish China from Arizona. If one gets lost in the night, such knowledge is valuable. In the course of this life, I have had a great many encounters with a great many people who have been concerned with matters of consequence. I have lived a great deal among grown-ups. I have seen them intimately, close at hand, and that hasn't much improved my opinion of them. Whenever I met one of them who seemed to me at all clear-sighted, I tried the experiment of showing him my drawing number 1, which I have always kept. I would try to find out, so, if this was a person of true understanding, but whoever it was, he or she would always say, that's a hat.
It's supposed to sound like birds, get it? That's the third movement from The Illuminations of the Beyond by French composer Oliver Messiaen. The piece isn't that old. It was written in the late 80s. So it's fairly contemporary music on WAIF. Thank you. You've been a great audience tonight if you made it through all that. We're looking into Illuminations of the Great Beyond. WAIF, it's 10 minutes until 12. Jazz is up next. Jazz all day tomorrow. Wednesday is Jazz Day here on WAIF. Really, you have been a wonderful audience tonight. I don't want you to go kidding yourself or anything. You really have been absolutely wonderful. This is the Lefty Jones Band with a song called He Who Cracks His Own Self Up.
He who cracks his own self up thought the god would spark his luck. He who cracks his own self up threw his watch in the pile of junk. Don't worry, he don't moan, he don't count up what he owns. Forgive us for the sins of man, drop a coin right in his cane. Now he who cracks his own self up smiles at people all the time. He even will smile at cops, and they don't like that an awful lot. Well, he who cracks his own self up knows who is free and what is worth. He says, bless the child who can stay nice and free himself from the heart of ice. Trials, so many stations, so many Gibsons and ovations. Hold out for the tender touch. God bless he who cracks his own self. He heard rents were cheaper there. No one cares if you don't care. Well, he looked up the holy bum. He was the sun in the sun. He was there with his pup. They like he who cracks his own self. India his home. Now he ain't living all alone. Let's drink a toast and raise a cup to he who cracks his own self. He who cracks his own self. He thought that God would spark his luck. Well, he who cracks his own self up, he threw his watch in pile. A joke.